Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley. Supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Police Benevolent Association, representing law enforcement, correctional, and correctional probation officers, strong advocates of keeping law enforcement and correctional services a core public function of government. The Florida PBA online at flpba.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through American Airlines with daily direct flights from Tallahassee to Miami and Dallas, with connections to over 270 domestic and international destinations. Fares and information available online at aa.com. And from
Hopping Green & Sams Law Firm. For over 30 years, with offices in Tallahassee, representing clients facing challenges and opportunities with government. This is Diane Carr of Hopping Green & Sams, on the web at hgslaw.com.
WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
Heated debate erupts in a number of legislative committees today as Florida lawmakers delve into three abortion-related bills.
This is so racist and sexist, it's basically implying by statute that women and minority babies are considered less desirable second-class citizens.
Lawmakers are pushing to reinforce parents' rights when it comes to making education decisions for children with disabilities.
Because nobody knows your child better than a mother or a father. This is a journey that never ends with our children.
And Florida's Democratic U.S. Senator insists the state has squandered much of the federal money sent to help homeowners avoid foreclosure. I'm Tom Flanagan. Welcome to Capitol Report. A couple of House panels took up several bills today that were abortion-related. They included a ban on having an abortion based on sex or gender, and another that would require the care for infants born alive after an abortion procedure. As Sasha Cordner reports, while all the bills passed out of their respective committees, it was not without controversy.
In two Wednesday morning committees, three measures related to abortion got taken up. The first was a proposal by Republican Representative Charles Van Zandt of Keystone Heights. His bill would prohibit a person from knowingly performing an abortion unless they signed a statement swearing they did not perform the procedure due to the child's sex or race. Violators could face a third-degree felony charge and up to a $10,000 fine. But opponents of the bill call it a, quote, discriminatory proposal. They claim it could require doctors to become investigators and make patients their suspects. And Democratic Representative Irv Salzberg was of the same opinion.
This is so racist and sexist, it's basically implying by statute that women and minority babies are considered less desirable second-class citizens.
Other opponents talked about how the bill's sponsor did not have any evidence of how often such a thing occurs. Proponents like Republican Representative James Grant say that shouldn't matter.
I don't know to the extent that these sort of procedures are happening. Representative Salzberg asked a question about the experts involved. I don't know the experts involved. I don't know the number of race or gender determined abortions that are happening, but one's enough. One's enough.
That bill passed on an 8-5 party line vote with Democrats opposed in the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee. The second measure the panel took up was sponsored by Republican Representative Larry Ahern. Under Florida law, it's a crime to cause or contribute to the death of what's called an unborn quick child. An unborn quick child is defined as a fetus that can live outside the womb. Ahern's bill would change the term unborn quick child to an unborn child. Some describe that bill as having, quote, very broad language for the definition of an unborn child and hope to work with the sponsor in tightening up the language. That included Missy Wisolowski with the Florida Alliance of Planned Parenthood.
It seems that the real purpose of this legislation is not to protect women, but to politicize violent crimes, especially those against pregnant women. For example, by defining unborn child in this legislation to member of the species Homo sapiens at any stage of development who is carried in the womb, this bill gives separate legal protections to a fertilized egg, embryo, or fetus.
And Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, the committee's chair, says he wants to put the bill in perspective.
Just for a moment, imagine being a husband who lost a wife who was pregnant. You haven't just lost the opportunity to take walks and share iced tea with your wife. You've lost the opportunity to take pictures of your daughter on her prom day. You've lost the opportunity to teach your son how to play baseball, who was unborn and who was killed.
The bill passed 9-4, mostly along party lines. And lastly, the House Civil Justice Subcommittee took up the third bill. Its sponsor is Republican Representative Kerry Pigman of Avon Park.
I've tried to strenuously maintain that all activities of this proposed bill happen after the abortion. My interest in this bill is solely and strictly to provide care for that infant that is born alive following any procedure that it receives full and appropriate resuscitation.
Pigman's bill states that any infant born alive must be taken to a hospital and immediately placed under the care of social services. But some, like Democratic Representative Jim Wallman, disagreed with that, saying the mother should at least have an opportunity to decide whether she wants to keep the newborn baby before the baby could be taken away.
We're going to say just because we have a suspicion, and that was the words Representative Pigman used, that that person would not have the best interests of that child at heart, we're going to take that child away. That's not what we should be doing in the legislature.
The bill passed favorably 10-2 in the House Civil Justice Subcommittee with bipartisan support and two dissenting votes from Democrats. Meanwhile, many opponents of all three bills say they're going to work with the sponsors before they head to their next committee stops. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Kortner.
Students with disabilities and their families face different challenges when it comes to navigating their education, and some require more assistance than others. Under federal law, they're required to have an individual learning plan called an IEP. Many times, those plans are crafted without much input from parents. But as Lynn Hatter reports, bills in the legislature are working to change that.
Not all students who have a disability will require specialized education, but for those who do, they get individual learning plans, or IEPs. The effort to give parents a greater say in those plans is being led in the Senate by two lawmakers who take the issue personally.
We do a lot of things around here, but probably nothing more important than looking out for kids with these kinds of unique abilities.
Republican Senator John Thrasher is co-sponsoring the proposal. His grandson has Down syndrome. IEPs are written by a team. State and federal law already require parents, school and district officials, and others who provide related services like a speech therapist to serve on that team. Parents can also bring others into the group, but that doesn't happen in every district. And Senator Andy Gardner, the bill's sponsor, whose son also has Down syndrome, says it's time to reinforce a parent's right to be heard.
We've heard stories of families that talk about the fear of going into the IEP process, walking into a room with 17 administrators and just that mother or that father and trying to do what's best for their child.
The IEP process can be overwhelming and intimidating for some parents, and a companion version of the proposal in the House would require districts to have forms that parents and officials would both sign, verifying that districts didn't interfere in that parent's right to have others present. Districts say it only adds to the paperwork, and they're also concerned about provisions dealing with how federal funds for students with disabilities are distributed between traditional schools and charters. Districts say they don't usually give out money and instead convert those dollars to services, like an extra teacher here or another piece of equipment there. Districts would now be required to give some federal funds directly to the charter schools. But those concerns are minor to supporters like Democratic Senator Maria Sachs, whose stepdaughter Jessica has a disability.
Nobody knows your child better than a mother or a father, a parent. This is a, I don't want to say a fight, but this is a journey that never ends with our children.
The measures also address how students with disabilities factor into school grades. Last year was the first year that special schools catering to disabled students were assigned letter grades. The practice is now mandated by federal law, and there's still disagreement on whether the state should grade these special schools. But Gardner says proposals like his are aimed at helping students with disabilities become more accepted and integrated into public school environments.
My idea of inclusion is that child with a unique ability in a regular classroom as much as possible, 80 to 90% of the day. Sadly, some school districts, the idea of inclusion is to have that child that's in a separate location brought in for art or music. That's not inclusion in my definitions. We believe that this is a step in the right direction. This is the start.
Both the House and Senate bills require all teachers seeking recertification to take a course in exceptional student education. The measure passed its Senate committee and is headed to its last stop in that chamber, and a companion bill is also moving in the House. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Join the conversation. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. Still to come on Capitol Report, opponents of a bill giving the governor more power over judge selection say it politicizes the judicial bench.
And anybody who doesn't think that this is a political issue, you shouldn't be surprised, or I guess you'll be surprised, that the vote pretty much is going to be party line.
While some worry the state's push to increase agritourism could lead to something like Woodstock, others argue it's just good family fun.
We're looking more for corn mazes, for hay rides, for ability for general public to come out to farms and enjoy agriculturally related activities.
And we'll grab a few yummy treats at the new food truck park near the Florida Capitol.
Support for Capitol Report is provided by the Able Trust, working to assure opportunities for successful employment for all people with disabilities. A skilled workforce for Florida's businesses. The Able Trust. Empowerment, education, employment. On the web at abletrust.org.
The former chairman of the Republican Party of Florida was sentenced today to 1.5 years in prison for stealing more than $125,000 in party funds. Jim Greer was sentenced in Orlando today, more than a month after he pleaded guilty to 4 counts of theft and a single count of money laundering. Circuit Judge Mark Lubet handed down a sentence that was less severe than the 3.5 years in prison requested by prosecutors. A trial had threatened to expose the underbelly of Florida's dominant political party and its formerly high-spending ways. Topics covered in pretrial depositions included allegations of prostitutes at a state GOP fundraiser in the Bahamas, the drinking habits of former Governor Charlie Crist, and intra-party strife. Prosecutors say Greer funneled almost $200,000 to a company he had formed with his right-hand man and kept $125,000 for himself. In February of 2010, the federal government allocated funds to several states, including Florida, to help nurse their ailing housing markets back to health and to help stop foreclosures. Since then, Florida has received a total of $1 billion in aid as part of the hardest-hit housing markets fund. But as Stephen Rodriguez reports, one congressional leader is calling foul on how the money has been managed.
U.S. Senator Bill Nelson says most of the money that was supposed to go to homeowners to help pay their mortgage hasn't been dispersed. Only about 16% of the $1 billion allotted to Florida has been doled out, the lowest in the country. Nelson wants a probe to find out why.
I'm asking the Inspector General to look specifically as to why Florida is the worst among all these states in getting this program off the ground to help people that it was intended to help.
Nelson says he wants to know why some of the money meant for legitimate homeowners went to people like convicted felons and people with bad financial histories. Historically, Republicans haven't been keen on the idea of spending federal dollars. There is legislation in the state Senate, however, to use roughly $50 million of the $1 billion fund in a principal reduction program for homeowners. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Stephen Rodriguez.
Should Florida's governor have the power to remove and replace people from the committees that nominate judges whenever he wants? A bill that's made it past a House committee would allow just that. And Jessica Palumbo reports it's drawing fire from groups including the Nonpartisan League of Women Voters and the Florida Bar.
Many Floridians might never stand before a judge inside a courtroom, but judges' decisions affect everyone, whether they're ruling about the shape of our congressional districts, or whether companies are allowed to tax us, or if our local laws violate the state constitution. When judges make those decisions, the Constitution says, they can only consider the facts of the case and the law. But Deirdre McNabb, president of the League of Women Voters of Florida, says one bill threatens to make judges more beholden to the whims of politics.
For the third straight year, a bill has been introduced which seeks to further expand political control and influence over what is supposed to be a nonpartisan merit system.
When there's an opening for an appeals court judge or when a trial judge leaves midterm, judicial nominating committees select up to 6 judges for the governor to choose from. The members of the nominating committees are also appointed by the governor, and he can remove them if they break the rules. But House Bill 7033 would take the governor's power a step further. It would allow him to remove judicial nominators anytime for any reason. Lawyer Todd Copeland, a member of the Judicial Nominating Committee for the Fifth Circuit, says that could disrupt the process.
For me, it's not a political thing. History has shown that both parties will have an opportunity to have the governor's mansion in the executive branch at some point in time. But I don't think either party should be allowed to disturb the process, which is the election of fair and independent judges.
That was Copeland testifying before the House Civil Justice Subcommittee last month. All public speakers who testified were also against the bill. They included representatives from the Florida Bar and the American Board of Trial Advocates. They all said it was an encroachment by one branch of government into another that's supposed to be equally powerful. But Bill's sponsor, Charlie Stone, a Republican from Ocala, says letting the nominating committees serve at the whim of the governor brings accountability to the process. He says that's because the governor is an elected official. One of Stone's Republican colleagues, Kathleen Pasadomo, says she does not think politics will affect judicial selection, even if the governor is allowed to kick people off nominating committees at any time.
No matter who the governor is, whether the governor is a Democrat or Republican, we have such dedicated people in our state who are on these committees, and I am confident that they will select names that will go to the governor that are the brightest minds of our state.
But Democratic Representative Jim Waldman from Coconut Creek disagrees.
And anybody who doesn't think that this is a political issue, you shouldn't be surprised, or I guess you'll be surprised, that the vote pretty much is going to be party line right here at this committee. And that doesn't make sense. I mean, it just makes no sense. We're a bunch of lawyers here.
Waldman's prediction came true with a party line 8-4 vote passing the bill out of committee. It's now in the House Judiciary Committee, but no Senate companion has been filed. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
An Orange County woman has been arrested and charged with defrauding Medicaid of $3 million. At a press conference in Orlando this afternoon, Attorney General Pam Bondi said the money was used to support a lavish lifestyle. We get more from member station WMFE in Orlando and Matthew Petty.
The website for Janie Vettini's company, called Improving Together, says it aims to provide mental health case management for adults and children. But investigators say between 2012 and 2013, Vettini billed Medicaid for more than $3 million in services that were never provided. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi says Vettini spent the money on jewellery, cars, travel and $175,000 of Louis Vuitton products.
I can tell you, I've never seen that much, and I've been in the store. So she must have done a tremendous amount of shopping. She also, as we said, went on a cruise with other individuals, many individuals. She was living a lavish lifestyle at the expense of taxpayers.
Investigators say Vettini used gift cards to entice Medicaid recipients to complete applications for services. She faces charges of Medicaid fraud, racketeering, and identity theft. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Matthew Petty in Orlando.
What's known as agritourism is becoming something of a moneymaker in Florida. Tourists are encouraged not just to visit the state's sunny beaches, but to also venture out for trips to places like the Great House Butterfly Farm in Ertleton, or to stop to pick up a few persimmons from Ken's Orchard in Newberry. A bill making its way through the State House would remove local regulations for such businesses in an effort to help them grow. But Regan McCarthy reports local governments worry about rules and the things that could spiral out of control.
So what is agritourism exactly? Well, that depends on who you ask. Adam Bassbird with the Florida Farm Bureau says it's good old-fashioned family fun down on the farm.
We're looking more for corn mazes, for hay rides, for ability for general public to come out to farms and enjoy
agriculturally related activities.
But David Cruz with the Florida League of Cities has a different vision for what agritourism with less regulation could mean.
Should I go wedding down to Las Vegas?
The bill says that local governments can't regulate agritourism at all. And so that brings into our mind the fear that some operators that are trying to use this statute to operate perhaps a large-scale festival, a large-scale Woodstock, think of big festivals like that, they might use this preemption.
And representatives from the Florida Association of Counties raised similar concerns, saying they'd like to see at least some limits. The bill is sponsored by Holly Rothschein, a Republican from Key Largo. She says her bill isn't just a free-for-all.
This bill essentially does three things. First, it limits the regulatory power of local governments. Second, it redefines agritourism activity to mean activities consistent with bona fide farms, ranches, and working forests. And thirdly, it limits liability for agritourism operators.
Still, the local government groups say they'd like to be able to impose a few rules about how many cars can be parked at a farm or what the business's hours of operation can be. And Representative Bill Hager, a Republican from Boca Raton, says that makes him want to vote in favor of the bill even more.
I think the best argument for this bill is, in fact, has been set forth by the opponents, who are basically units of government who are telling us that they're hot to limit the number of cars that can visit a farmer. And what else do we need to know to vote for this bill?
Meanwhile, other lawmakers, like Representative Jose Rodriguez, a Democrat from Miami, say they've got some concerns with the bill.
I really take issue with the idea of limitations on liability as economic development. Often we've seen bills come through this committee, and, you know, we talk about limiting the rights of injured persons to recover as if it is economic development. I have difficulty with that concept.
Both the League of Cities and Association of Counties say they hope they'll be able to reach a compromise with Representative Rothschein on her bill. The bill has two more committees to go before reaching the House floor. A similar measure is also moving through the Senate. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. And now here's Ronald J. Eben with a look at what's coming up at the Capitol tomorrow.
The Senate Appropriations Committee meets at 9 Thursday morning and is prepared to release its proposed budget bill. Lawmakers will then have the weekend to look it over and to offer amendments by the 1st of April deadline. The committee will also consider firefighter and police officer pension plans. The Special Orders Calendar Group meets at 12:15 tomorrow to set the calendar for next week's floor session. In the House, the Economic Affairs Committee, Judiciary Committee, and State Affairs Committee all meet at 10:30. At 11, Florida Tax Watch will hold a news conference in the Cabinet Room to announce the winners of its 25th anniversary Prudential Davis Productivity Awards. The awards given to state employees statewide for their innovations and productivity that saved the state $514,000. Also at 11 in the Capitol Courtyard, Honor Release Return Incorporated will seek to educate citizens and elected officials on the prisoner of war or missing in action issue. Those are some of the items on the legislative agenda for Thursday, March 28th. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally this evening, a long, hard day of lawmaking can really work up an appetite. But during a frenzied legislative session, there's often little time and few places near the Florida Capitol to find a tasty, healthy meal. But Ryan Bank found there is a convoy of food trucks rolling to the rescue in Tallahassee.
All right, guys, how's it taste? Let me hear from you.
Woo!
The John's Lot, named after a former Florida governor, has been largely unoccupied since the Occupy Tallahassee protesters were evicted last year. Now the city is allowing food trucks to use the lot temporarily. Food Truck Association President Rebecca Kelly says the idea was a collaborative effort.
After a lot of meetings and a lot of meeting of the minds and a ton of support from not only the trucks that you see behind me, but the other 12 members of the Tallahassee Food Truck Association, plus the support of the other food trucks in the area, we all collaborated and worked to put this project together.
The new food truck court is within walking distance of many state agencies and the Florida Capitol. And Department of Business and Professional Regulation Secretary Ken Lawson says that makes the new location prime real estate.
What matters here is location, location, location. We got the Capitol behind us, got a session going on, we got a bunch of hungry people.
Lawson says the number of food trucks is growing in Florida. He says after the economic collapse of 2008, many restaurant entrepreneurs opted for the smaller, cheaper, more mobile alternative to traditional brick-and-mortar businesses. And State Representative Alan Williams, a Democrat from Tallahassee, says he's looking to make Tallahassee the state's food truck capital.
And I will tell you, as I go around the country, especially in Washington, D.C., you see that that has really taken off as a real capital for food trucks. And now the state capital is going to be another capital for food trucks.
Williams thinks the food court will be a great economic success in downtown Tallahassee.
Just short and sweet. If you build it, they will come. And I think that's what we want to underscore. And I'm glad that a lot of state workers will be able to come here.
The new food truck court will feature 6 trucks for lunch 7 days a week. And will have food ranging from pizza to barbecue to Mexican cuisine. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Ryan Bank.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Evan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo, along with Ryan Bank, Thomas Andrew Gustafson, and Stephen Rodriguez. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report. And join us again each weeknight during the 2013 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: a grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart, and Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care, on the web at searcylaw.com. The Florida Police Benevolent Association, representing law enforcement, correctional, and correctional probation officers, strong advocates of keeping law enforcement and correctional services a core public function of government. The Florida PBA online at flpba.org. Tallahassee Regional Airport, offering service through American Airlines with daily direct flights from Tallahassee to Miami and Dallas, with connections to over 270 domestic and international destinations. Fares and information available online at aa.com. And from
Hopping Green & Sams Law Firm. For over 30 years, with offices in Tallahassee, representing clients facing challenges and opportunities with government. This is Diane Carr of Hopping Green & Sams, on the web at hgslaw.com.
WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.